Hello, I'm Trey Marone, and welcome to the West Virginia Educast. In this episode, we're going to be talking about the relationship between education and the media. Our special guest today is Ryan Quinn, who will be discussing various topics such as open meetings, communication, off-the-record conversations, and obstacles that can occur between school systems and reporters. Ryan is the education reporter for Charleston Gazette Mail, West Virginia's largest paper. His coverage includes statewide education, ranging from pre-K to higher education. Ryan has been with the Gazette for the past 7 years, and prior to that, he worked as a journalist for newspapers in both South Carolina and Kentucky, covering topics such as local government, city commission, and cops, and feature stories. He also interned as a copy editor and page designer for the New York Times Company. Welcome, Ryan.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, good to see you and to have you here as a guest today. Why don't we just dive right in here, and let me just start off with kind of a general question of what role does the media play as the fourth estate, so to speak, in public education?
I think the most important role is to hold education accountable, whether it's public education or private education, which is being increasingly funded nowadays by the legislature. So I think that kind of moves it more into that public realm where both for public and now private education is being funded by taxpayer money. And so I think the media's job is to be able to tell taxpayers whether they're getting the best bang for their educational buck. And even if you don't pay taxes, even if you pay taxes, but you don't care how much you pay, I mean, the bigger issue is there's a moral obligation to our children to provide them with the best opportunities and education possible. And media is a part of ensuring that that's actually occurring by following what's going on, reporting what's going on, and trying to hold all types of education, whether it's public, private, homeschool, higher ed, pre-K, accountable for actually doing the best it can with the funding it's provided, and hold the legislature accountable for providing the funding to education that's needed for education to actually perform well.
Well, obviously, education is a very big thing and very important to society. So basically, it sounds like you're saying that, you know, all these people who are involved in the educational process, whether they're public officials, whatever their role might be in carrying off this education system, for the betterment of our students and children in West Virginia, your role as a reporter is basically to report on what is going on, what is happening, keep people informed so that there's a system of accountability there, so that the people who, the ones who are doing the work to make sure that the system is doing what it's supposed to be doing, you're able to report on that so that people can, you know, have an awareness of what's going right, what's going wrong, what might need to be questioned, that type of thing.
Yeah, and I think that accountability is important because, you know, we have accountability mechanisms built into our school system in different ways. One of them, standardized testing, you know, there are teacher evaluations and things like that. But, you know, it's not like there are huge hammers that fall on school systems that, I don't know, don't do well on standardized testing or spend on a program that really doesn't improve student achievement. Spend a lot of money on something that's really not going to move the needle. There are all sorts of things that it's good for a reporter to be there to actually cover them and to tell people what's going on, because otherwise the automatic accountability mechanisms built into our system don't really kick in, it seems, until something goes really wrong. Mm-hmm. Like a state takeover, you know, like there are all sorts of places that a reporter could report on what's going on in a county ahead of like a state takeover that could head off that state takeover from ever happening by exposing what's going on to the public, helping to engage citizens more in their school board, helping the board itself to know that it's being watched and it needs to be, you know, it needs to be responsible to taxpayers and responsible to the kids in the system. And I think if you have active media reporting what's going on, you've got a situation where problems are ferreted out and they are explained to the public clearly and in a way that the normal person can understand. And even though people may be upset with that level of accountability and transparency in the moment, I think that that sort of thing is the kind of reporting and the kind of stories that can head off people being blindsided by all of a sudden their school system gets found out in this report for doing XYZ wrong. And now it's a situation where problems have gone on for years and the state school board's stepping in. With active media, I think that we can find and fix those issues earlier locally with the locally democratically elected representatives of the county school system.
Well, and absolutely. And with yourself, especially, you know, I know I follow you on social media and, you know, with social media availability, it's almost like real-time reporting. I mean, I can know from Ryan Quinn, you know, what's going on right now, you know, at the legislature. So, you know, that's helped as well as far as your monitoring capabilities and reporting capabilities. I know you end up writing stories and things thereafter, but, you know, really it seems to me like the media just has a very active role in the transparency element of any type of public service. I mean, here we're talking about education, but you're basically helping facilitate that much needed and necessary level of transparency between the public and whoever's, you know, whoever you're covering.
Yeah, and I agree. I mean, like for the legislature, I mean, it's like a Byzantine process as to how a bill becomes law. And there are so many steps that, you know, as a regular person who's got a, you know, a 9-to-5 job or often longer these days. So let's not kid ourselves. Some people are working ridiculous hours and they come back and they have to care for their kids and they've got all this stuff going on in their lives. And you can't expect someone like that to be able to follow every committee meeting and log on, even though the legislature is nice enough to provide that, like video feeds. And increasingly school boards in the time of COVID have been providing live online meetings, which we in the media appreciate, and I'm sure citizens do as well. But the amount of stuff that goes on every day, even with the transparency that's provided through online mechanisms like live streaming of meetings and things like that, there's no way that a regular person can keep up with it all and be able to understand all the jargon and what's going on here and the way that some of these people talk, often lawyers, and in the case of the legislature, often lawyers talking with other lawyers. And it's good to have someone there who will go to all those things for you, go to those meetings for you, talk to your officials for you, tell you what the issues are, present them to you in a digestible format. And then if you want to dig in further, you can follow up with your own board members. You can go to the meetings and things like that. But oftentimes you just don't have time for that, especially with the legislature and how fast these bills move. And you need people who are at the Capitol or talking to senators and delegates who you know, if you call these lawmakers, they'll pick up the phone because they know a reporter's calling and they should answer. These are the kind of people that you want there to be able to actually break down all of this rather opaque way that government works and explain it to you in a way that you can get and you don't have to take all this time out of your day to do this investigation yourself.
And, you know, speaking of transparency, you know, how important are the open governmental proceedings, you know, the open meetings laws, some call them the sunshine laws, how important are those to this process?
I think they're fundamental because it's actually at an open meeting that a lot of these decisions actually take legal effect. It requires the votes of the county board or the state board of education or the higher education policy commission or in the legislature, the vote of the committee to do things like pass policies, hire employees, advance bills, all these sorts of things. Open meetings not only allows you to see where your elected officials fall on those sorts of decisions, or in the case of state board, your unelected officials. Not only is the open meetings gives you a chance to see that vote actually take place, but it's also supposed to allow you to see the different politicians or appointees talk about what action to take and actually deliberate toward that action and show you their thought process, show you their disagreements, if there are any disagreements, show you how they actually come to consensus. That's at its best what the Open Meetings Act is supposed to allow you to do, is not only see the vote at the end of the day, actually putting into legal effect the action, whether it's a passing a policy or whatever, but to see all of that discussion and that deliberation that leads into the vote actually going down as it does. The open meetings are something that's afforded not just to media, but to anybody can show up at that public meeting and see what's going on. But as I talked about earlier, oftentimes it's media going because a lot of people just don't have the time to attend. And it's up to the media to have access to the Open Meetings Act, to have access to these open proceedings, to then be able to see what's going on in government, see why the officials decide the things they do, see their thought process, and then convey all of that back to the readers.
Absolutely. And I know, you know, I've been on, you know, in government and on boards and things. And, you know, I always felt like that was important. And a lot of times our meetings would be very lengthy and we would get criticized for that about how long our meetings were. But, and yet people who kind of whipped right through their meeting and there was no discussion and it was, you know, everything was like predetermined. They were so proud of it. And I wanted to say, you're not really doing what it is, you know, designed that you should be doing. You should be having these conversations. How can you have all these things already decided before you even have a meeting and have an opportunity to discuss? So point well made with you. I appreciate that. You know, I have to ask, have you ever been shut out of a meeting? And if so, what happens then? What do you do?
Yeah, I mean, I have been, and I think that the ways that I've been shut out of meetings is usually by people calling for executive sessions for things that don't seem to be actually allowable under executive session. I think that that's one of the most abused parts of the law is the use of executive sessions. Now, what I do differs, right? I mean, if it's something that I don't care too much about, or I was rushing to get in the paper for a daily story, you know, maybe it's something that the editor wanted more than me as a reporter to fill the paper. He wanted me to report on this or that. You know, if it's something that I'm not personally invested in too much, if I'm shut out, maybe I report the information that I have that day and move on to the next thing. But if it's something that I care about, it means I'm just going to dig in more. Mm-hmm. It means I'm going to follow up, call you for more information. If you don't provide me the information, I'm going to call other people. That could include calling people outside of the school system. And it gets to a point where if you don't provide the information up front, again, on something that I care about, reporting about a lot, then you're in a situation where you've essentially forced me to do more work and you've forced me to call more people and you've forced me to investigate more. And you may not like the things that I find by investigating further. And because I put in the work to try to find something out that you didn't tell me up front, then it could be that this story that I was planning to write just daily or at the end of the week turns into a broader investigation. And so I think that it's smart for any politician to be transparent in the first place. You know, don't shut people out of your meetings, answer phone calls and things like that. Not only because I think it's the right thing to do, but if you provide information to people who are asking you for that information, that means that they are less inclined to want to go and try to find that information out elsewhere because you've already given it to them. So I eventually, you know, it could get as serious as me filing Freedom of Information Act requests. And if those aren't answered, it could get to the point where, and the Gazette Mail has increasingly been going to court over trying to get access to the documents and the meetings that we want to actually obtain. So yeah, I just think that providing that transparency up front can save a lot of people a lot of trouble.
Well, a note to self for a lot of public officials, if you are preventing someone from getting information, you're probably you're probably, the instinct of that person is going to be you're hiding something, or you're trying to, I mean, someone like yourself that's experienced enough to know what should and should not be an executive session, what should and should not the public be shut out of, they should really recognize that your instinct is going to be, hey, there's something more here, or else why would you be shutting me out? Good point. You know, let's turn to some practical pointers. You know, a lot of our listeners are school board members and superintendents and people involving, you know, well, county and state, actually, school systems. What would you say would be the best way for boards to communicate with the media?
It depends on what you're trying to communicate with the media for, and it depends on what kind of media you're actually communicating with. If you've got like positive stories about employees winning awards or like a new program that you're launching and things like that, there's all sorts of media, whether it's Metro News, TV stations, a lot of weekly newspapers that want that stuff, right? They actually need it because they have, sometimes their reporters have quotas where they're actually told they have to have three stories in a day or something like that. They have newspapers they need to fill. They have TV spots they've got to actually fill with content. If you meet that drive for content and that thirst for content with things like positive stories about your school system, and by sending out, you know, news releases and putting that on your social media, you know, reporters are often on Twitter much more than the average person is, and putting on your Facebook, that's a good way to actually get a lot of those stories in the paper. Now, if you're talking about communicating with the media about something that is like you want a more in-depth story, or you want a reporter to look into something that you think the State Department of Education may be doing wrong, or that the legislature is doing wrong, there are outlets that focus more on that sort of thing, whether it's my paper, the Gazette Mail, or West Virginia Public Broadcasting, Brad McElhenney at Metro News. Most of their stuff is quick hit, but he does a lot of more in-depth stories. Mountain State Spotlight, pretty much any national organization like Hechinger Report and things like that. These sorts of organizations, you know, we get press releases all the time, and we're following everyone on Twitter. We see stuff come out on Twitter all the time. And to us, you know, maybe a teacher winning an award, or a new program that we haven't seen actual academic outcomes from, maybe that doesn't rise to the level of what we find newsworthy. But if you call us and you pitch a story, instead of just sending out a press release or something like that, if you call us and pitch a story, we're more inclined to actually want to follow up on it, because we are humans at the end of the day. And it's so easy to ignore an email, and it's so easy to ignore a tweet. But it's not so easy to ignore someone calling you up and saying, hey, we've had a program in place for 2 years now, and it's showing great outcomes. Like, you can actually prove this is not something we're going to give up on in a year, like so many other programs are thrown to the wayside. This is actually improving graduation rates or test scores or whatever. Call me up, call one of these other organizations up and say, hey, can you give us some coverage on this? Or if it's something like what the legislature is screwing up, hey, this is going to really kill our budget, something like that, call us up and say, hey, I'd like you to pay attention to it, because it's much harder for us to say no when we're actually talking to someone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great points. And for our listeners, I'm sure they appreciate all those. Yeah, tell us, what does it really mean to be off the record?
This means different things to some different reporters. So I would suggest anytime you want to go off the record, you talk with the reporter that you want to go off the record with and ask him, what does this mean? What do you mean by off the record? What would that mean regarding what you're going to do with the information that I'd like to tell you off the record? To me, what off the record is it is an ethical obligation by the reporter to basically not burn that source. That source basically wants to tell me something, and whether that source is a county superintendent or school board member or whatever, oftentimes it's not used with politicians. It's often used with regular folks who have some sort of issue at their school, but they're afraid of retaliation against their kid if their name is in the paper or something like that, but they want to say what's going on at the school or whatever. But off the record is an ethical obligation that the reporter enters into with the source to say, I'm not going to reveal the source of this information in any article or social media or anywhere. I'm not going to publish the source of the information. I'm not going to tell people who told me this, right? So I think that the most important thing to remember about off the record is that you cannot unilaterally enter into off the record. You should never send an email saying, hey, Ryan Quinn, or to any reporter and say, off the record, blah, 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 blah. That's not off the record. Off the record is only entered into when you ask the reporter, hey, can I tell you something off the record? And the reporter agrees to that. Then you are now off the record. And then the reporter is in a point where that's like one of the worst sins of journalism. If you ever break off the record, if you break off the record with someone who you've actually entered into that compact with, that ethical agreement says, I as a reporter, I'm not going to reveal this, right? So once you've actually asked the reporter and said, hey, can we go off the record? And the reporter agrees, then you can say things that the reporter will keep off the record and will always keep off the record. I only have one rule for ever breaking off the record, which is don't lie to me off the record. Don't abuse off the record to tell me lies. But if you have some true information that you'd like to keep anonymous where it came from, you can tell me off the record. And then importantly with off the record, I think is that, so like, let's use an example of you want to go off the record to talk about something that the state superintendent is ordering you to do. But you don't want to go in you don't want the state superintendent to know that you said to a reporter that the state superintendent was ever ordering every county superintendent to do this, right? Not only do I have an obligation once I've entered off the record to not reveal you as the source in print or social media or anything like that, I also have an obligation not to reveal you as the source of that information when I'm interviewing anyone about that information. I can't call up, you know, the state superintendent and say, oh, so-and-so told me off the record that X happened. Is that true? Because that would also be burning you as a source. Nor can I say, oh, I heard off the record X, and the state superintendent can be able to narrow that down to, oh, I know exactly who said that because there's only one person who could have said that. I can't do that either. It's a promise not to burn you in any way, shape, form, or fashion, as Jim Justice likes to say. And also, off the record information, you know, I there's no time that I can think of that I've maybe like I can't think of an occasion really where off the record information ever goes into the paper from me saying, okay, this came from an anonymous source or something like that. Usually, I have to find a way to confirm stuff that I've heard off the record with on the record sources in order to get that actually into the paper attributed to actual, you know, sources that can be named. Hardly ever do I ever put something that someone anonymously told the Gazette Mail this, right? The off the record information is a jumping off point to do investigation. But there are times where I can use multiple off the record sources, again, not revealing any individual one of them, to put something in the paper, like a line saying that this is something I would put in the paper, several county superintendents who did not wish to be named said that the state superintendent told them to do X in a conference call. That way, I've used multiple off-the-record sources to put something in the paper, but I haven't revealed any of my sources because there's 55 superintendents and anyone could have told me. So that's a way that off-the-record is actually used.
Well, you listen, I hope, Ryan Quinn, that everybody listened very carefully to what you've just covered about off-the-record. I can tell you and the listeners here, you probably don't recall this, but the lesson that you just gave, you gave to me when we first met many years ago. I believe I was on a school board at the time we met, and you and I were having a conversation about something. I don't recall it now. I hope you don't either, but I remember distinctly you explaining to me what off the record meant and what it did not mean. Yeah. And I will tell you and thank you, from that point forward, I followed exactly what you just said about, you know, you don't just come and say, hey, let me tell you something. It's off the record, right? You know, nothing like that. You have to go through the steps that you just outlined for everybody on making sure that agreement has been reached, and it's been reached by the reporter as well. You don't just assume it, and certainly don't send an email. So, you know, like I said, I'll just thank you for that personally, because you gave me that instruction way into my career, because I didn't know it before you told me and outlined it for me. And who knows how many times I said stuff and thought it was off the record, but thank you.
Yeah. You can always ask. I don't want to suggest that people do this, because it puts reporters in awkward positions. But if you mess up and you say something on the record that you actually wanted to be off the record without that agreement in place, you can ask the reporter and say, hey, actually, I don't want that to be in the paper. Can you make that off the record? The reporter is not under any obligation to actually honor that, but you've asked, and maybe the reporter will be nice enough to say, okay, I'll keep that off the record, you know. But always, always, to avoid that awkward situation, always ask, may we go off the record? And if the reporter says yes, then you're good to go. Just don't lie to the reporter. And make sure in conversation when you're say, okay, can we go back on the record? So the reporter knows, okay, now this is now back on the record. Yeah. Be very clear about these things so no one is confused.
Truth. And you were clear to me, and I never forgot it. Hey, I know we got to talking here, and we probably need to wrap up here on this, but I still wanted to ask you a question. What if someone reading a news account or media account of something went on in the schools, what if they read that and they feel like, well, hey, that's not really accurate. That's not really what happened or how it happened. What should they do?
There's a lot of feeling among people that they don't want to criticize others, and they're just so averse to criticizing someone for doing something wrong. Never hesitate when you see something wrong in the paper or wrong online, or the reporter got something wrong or just simply misleading. Never hesitate. Immediately call the reporter, because we are immediately, a clock starts ticking toward deadline, right? That the presses start running at some point. And the faster you tell us means the faster we can fix it online, which means that a story that people are, you know, if it's online, people could be currently retweeting it and sharing it on Facebook and things like that. That's the faster we can fix it online. And the faster you tell us is the faster that we can actually fix it for print. And at some point you could tell us about a mistake, but it's already gone to the presses, and that's too late to fix it in print. We can issue a correction later on, but that's not nearly as effective as having the print product right in the first place. Honestly, I am as a reporter, am happy to know that people are reading my stuff. You know, there's not much more offensive than someone who thinks that you are writing poorly about them or misleading or putting misleading information in the paper about them, but doesn't have the decency to call you about it. Because if it's really untrue, if it's really misleading, please talk to us, because we would love to correct it and love to get it right. And oftentimes the people we're quoting in stories about education, oftentimes they're the experts, right? They're the educators, they're the superintendents, they know the budgets, you know, they know what's going on with the policy, probably a lot better than a lot of people out there. And so we're open to hearing what the experts think we've got wrong in our articles. And another thing is that it's good on your part too, because if it's a serious, and not just for getting things right, which we should all be seeking to put the truth out there. But if it rises to a level of, you know, it could be defamatory, it could lead to a defamation or libel lawsuit, calling the reporter and telling them that there's something wrong with the article starts a clock ticking, right, for the reporter and the media organization to start fixing what's wrong with that article. You know, if that ever becomes some sort of issue in the future where it goes to court, you're in a position where you could say, hey, I called the reporter, I called the media organization, and I said, hey, this is wrong, and he didn't fix it. He never fixed this issue. He never fixed this information. you know, what would you tell the judge if you never called the reporter at all, right? If you never, yeah, I mean, what would you say to him? Always call the reporter. And if the reporter doesn't give you what you want, if he doesn't fix the information, if he doesn't make it more clear, you have the right then to go up the chain of command, call the reporter's editor. The reporter won't fix it. Then call the publisher. You know, you can go up the chain of command, but just like anything in life, whether you're talking to inside your own workplace or whatever, I think it's always best to go to the person first. Like if you have a problem with your fellow employee, you talk to the employee first before going to their boss, right?
Right.
The same sort of kindness should be extended to reporters who are often in a position that they are more able to fix their work quicker than an editor who's focusing on a whole lot of other stuff. I think it's both faster to go to the reporter first. That's also the right thing to do before going up to their boss. But you have every right to go up to my boss if I don't fix what needs to be fixed immediately, you know.
Good to know, and thank you. Hey, Ryan Quinn, thank you so much for your time and insight on so many topics today. Hopefully our listeners have learned something new today that may aid them in the future, you know, in an open meeting or how to pitch a story or how to make sure they're off the record. So I want to thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to be with us here today.
Well, thank you for having me.
Hey, if somebody, Ryan, would like to follow you on social media or contact you about a story, what's the best way to do that?
Social media, the best place to follow me is at Ryan E. Quinn. It's my Twitter handle. Again, that's R-Y-A-N-E Quinn, Q-U-I-N-N. And you have to have the at symbol in front of it. And then if you want to email me, it's ryan.quinn, Q-U-I-N-N, at hdmediallc.com. Again, it's ryan.quinn at hdmediallc.com. And you can always call me on my cell, 843-729-4990. Still got that South Carolina number. People still think I'm calling from Myrtle Beach when I call them sometimes, but 843-729-4990.
Hey, so Ryan Quinn, all access right there. You heard it here. So reach out to him if you have anything to say. And listeners, make sure you join us for future episodes where we'll discuss topics such as recent legislation, county board agendas, unemployment claims, the role of the West Virginia Ethics Commission, and many, many more topics. Until then, I'm Trey Marone, and this is the West Virginia EduCast. Thank you for taking a listen.